welcome to episode 50 of Good Timing with me, your host, Isabel Hagen. 50 episodes. How about it? Isn't that exciting? I just woke up from a two-hour nap. Oh boy. If you've listened to previous episodes, you know that I do not advise taking naps, but something else about me, I often do not take my own advice. So I did take a nap. You know, I think I needed it. I was a little run down from running around doing a lot of shows lately, but I gotta tell you, I do not feel great. I always just, you know, well, you know what it's like taking naps. If you listen to this podcast, let's face it, you're probably a napper. But boy, do we have a good episode for you today. Episode 50. My guest is Anya Marina, great singer-songwriter, all around, just amazing human being. We met sort of in the comedy scene, which is something interesting about Anya. She's not only a singer-songwriter, but she's very much involved with comedians. That makes it sound like she's dating them. I did not mean it like that. I mean, like, she's friends with a lot of comedians. She does podcasts with them. She collaborates with them. So what a perfect guest for this podcast, right? We talk about comedy and songwriting and the similarities between those two processes. Anya's latest studio album, Queen of the Night, and her new live album, which I was at the recording of, I believe. I think that was the live album that this is, unless she did another live album that I didn't know about. Anyway, she's got a live album, Live and Alone in New York. So those two albums, Queen of the Night, Live and Alone in New York, both streamable everywhere and downloadable at anyamarina.bandcamp.com. You can also join her Patreon. That's patreon.com/anyamarina for exclusive songs, shows, and updates. And if you love hearing Anya in this podcast, which I know you will, you can hear her more Monday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. She's got a radio show on amazingradio.us. Check that out for sure. And if you enjoy this podcast, as always, the best way to support is just to open up Apple Podcasts and hit that 5-star button. If you really feel inclined, also leave a little review, just a little nice message. It'd be like 2 words, you know, just love it or hate it. You know, all press is good press. So whatever you want to do. Nah, I don't say hate it. I'm a little fragile these days. So if you hate it, that's fine. But, you know, maybe keep it to yourself. Also, you're probably not listening right now. If you hate it, you probably turned it off the moment I started speaking. Anyway, that's it for this intro. We're going to get right to the podcast now. So please, without further ado, enjoy my conversation with Anya Marina. Anya, thank you so much for doing this. You've been on my list of people to have on the podcast for a while, actually.
I'm honored. Thank you for having me. This is so exciting. I'm a fan.
Oh, I'm a fan of yours. I mean, I got to hear you. I feel like I heard you live like right before the pandemic, maybe. Or I don't know when that was exactly at Rockwood, but it feels like it was right before everything shut down.
Oh, that's right. That was my last show in front of an audience in New York. I was recording my live album.
Oh, yeah.
That was great that you came. Thank you. I owe you a record. Everyone who came that night was supposed to get an album. And
I've been waiting for
it.
I really just brought you on to hound you about getting my record.
Let me make a note here. Send Isabel my goddamn live album.
I think you should call it my goddamn live album. Yeah. That'd be great.
That's pretty good.
But it was such a good show, and you know, it was. I'd heard your music before, and I was a fan. But also, just the stories you told between songs, and you're so good in all ways on stage. And you know, I was doing a little snooping into your Wikipedia and everything, and trying to piece it all together. But was music the first thing you did that was creative, or did it start with something else?
Well, first of all, thank you. That means a lot coming from someone whose set I saw, I think, 2 years ago. And I was just like, this girl is so funny and so dry. And I want to know her. I remember I was like, I couldn't figure out who you were. And I asked like 10 comedians around town. I was like, does anyone know who that girl was? It was at the audition for the Montreal thing that you guys all do. And they were like, yeah. And I'm like, she was blonde. She had a very dry sense of humor. She was like Phoebe from Friends, but way more dark. They're like, I don't know. And then finally, I think it was Ian Fidance. I was like, yeah, it's Isabel. And I was like, okay, I need to immediately follow her and start stalking her. So that means a lot. Thank you.
Well, it just goes to show you that I am not very well. I need to like network more. Everyone's just like, I don't know who that is. Well, sounds like a new comedian.
That was a while ago.
Yeah.
But no, once they heard dry and beautiful, they were like, oh yeah. And you blew everyone away, by the way, that night. It was at the New York Comedy Club. I was just like, wow, this girl's got something. She's got it. She's got the it factor.
Well, that means a lot. Thank you, Anya.
I want to be a comedy agent in my next life, like finding new talent. But you asked me, you asked me something and I've already forgotten. Was I always writing songs?
Was music your first sort of entryway into being creative, or was it acting, or how did you start?
When I was six, I wrote a letter to the Disney company announcing that I wanted to be in their motion pictures. And then I think early on, I really wanted to be on SNL. And, you know, as I was growing up, I was like, I want to perform and I think I want to be an actor. But then once I tried to commit to acting when I was like, I think 20, I spent 9 months in LA going on auditions. I didn't get one thing. I got a voiceover ad for like safe sex or something, like some weird PSA for abstinence. I think I was like, abstinence is important. You know, that was like, I think I earned $50. And then I realized quickly, like, I'm not going to be a TV or film actress, at least not right now. So I went home and I finished school. And I think maybe as early as 10 or yeah, around 10, I was writing little songs to myself, but I just remember walking to school and making up songs in my head, you know, going along with the, as I was walking, you know, on the pavement.
Yeah.
And I would come up with these little songs. And I was always in choir and stuff, but it really wasn't until I was like 20, 21 that I started fooling around with, you know, picking up a guitar and playing songs and making them up.
It's interesting how that can happen. I mean, where you maybe have something that's a part of you, but you don't think of it as something to do as a career. It's just like, oh, well, that's, I just write songs. Like, of course. Like I always liked being funny and I loved comedy, but I was like, but I'm a viola player and I'm not a comedian, and that's not something. But anytime I wrote a story for class, it was like a funny story. And then, you know, later on you have this maybe revelation like, oh, this has been with me all along. Like, I love this. This is my thing. It sounds like similar to that.
Yeah. And it's funny how people will sort of try to put you in boxes, and people still do that. Like, you know, you don't get a lot of messages growing up, or at least I didn't, that it was okay to do multiple things. Like, you know, you still hear that, like, you know, if an actor is talking on Twitter about politics, you know, you'll read the replies and there's so many that are like, shut up and act, or, you know, or shut up and sing to a singer. It's like, you don't have an opinion, just do the job you're supposed to do. And I remember I was in this band, my very first band I was in. I had been recruited to be the singer for this band. I didn't write the music. I was writing lyrics and melodies. So I guess I was helping to write songs, but they had brought me in to kind of like quickly come up with like a top line over their music. And I was like, this isn't really the kind of music I was into. It was like Cocteau Twins and Ride and Slow Dive, like shoegazery kind of rock, I guess. And it was really heavy, and I was like, oh, you guys want me to do this? And they were like, yeah, just listen to all these albums and sound like that. And so I tried, and it was a really good entryway into performing. You know, like, here I was on stage now in San Francisco at like 21, I think. And you know, I didn't know what I was doing. All the songs sound the same. They all are like like, it's like one or two notes. I just alternate. But I'm trying to figure it out. And I remember in between songs, I was like trying to do my little stand-up comedy routine. I didn't have jokes, but I just had stories like, you guys, I have a crazy Russian mom. Let me tell you a story about what she told me today. You know, and they were so, people were so confused. Like, wait, this is like a goth band. And this girl's like trying to tell these like sort of halfway entertaining, you know, anecdotes. It just didn't work. And I remember my uncle came to a show and he was like, you look very, my Russian uncle, it's like, you look very beautiful on stage and you are, you know, the songs are good, but I think maybe your stories don't tell them because it doesn't make sense with the music.
Well, you weren't singing your own songs, right? So it was like right. other people's music, but then your sort of narrative between them. So
yes.
maybe it took like, you know, you being on stage singing your own songs. Obviously, it's like sort of all an extension of the same story at that
Very
point.
Very true. Very good point.
But so what do you think kept you going in that direction, even though you were maybe getting some like not great feedback at first? What was like the thing that was like, but I want to keep telling stories and... Or was it writing your own songs eventually? Or?
I think it was, well, certainly, you know, I moved to San Diego. I got a job in radio. And so I kind of had to quickly like tear the Band-Aid off from that band and be like, sorry, guys, I got a job. I got to go. And they were kind of shocked. But I dove into radio. And so I was like a radio DJ in San Diego and kind of getting my footing there. But San Diego at that time was this really... kind of like a coffee shop music scene kind of town. Like Jewel had just come out of there and gotten really big playing in San Diego. Jason Mraz was like one of my peers when I was playing coffee shops. He was still just like a guy starting out that was like playing open mics with us. And I remember him like handing me flyers. I was like, this guy's really pushy. Like he's always giving me these flyers.
Ugh, isn't it like the worst when those pushy people you realize like, oh, but that's...
They're really talented, yeah.
That's what it, or like that's what it takes. And you're just like, ugh, I don't want to be like a
pushy... Yeah, there were some seriously talented people that I remember seeing his show and being like, oh God, like, you know when you're a star because, you know, one day you play and... seven people are there. And then the next time you play, it's sold out. Like he was just immediately selling out every night. And we were like, who is this guy? He just got to town. But his voice, it was just like, wow. But I think I started playing open mics. And once I had written like maybe three songs, just noodly little songs in my bedroom. And they were probably kind of novelty-ish, you know, like silly. Not, I don't know, like... Now I wouldn't write a song like that, but they, you know, it would be like a good natured, good humored, you know, song about like, my first song was Santa Ana Winds. And it was all about these windstorms that were happening, but it was silly. It was funny. It was about how my roof had caved in my apartment because my upstairs neighbor had left his hose on and like my whole kitchen had a hole in it. And I was just like looking up at his, there was like now a skylight in my apartment. And so I was like, I really want to tell this story about this funny thing that happened. So I should write a song about it. So I'll have a good song intro. And it was just so fun. And I just got a kick out of it. I think I was terrified of doing both things, terrified of telling the stories. I will never call them jokes because I don't consider myself a comedy writer. I always say my stories. So
well,
I would tell
with so many comedians too. They're probably you're like, don't you dare.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, that's not a joke. And then I just, you know, and I would get so nervous singing too, because I could barely play and I was really nervous about singing. I had been teased growing up about my voice. My voice is always kind of like up here. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if you can imagine even higher and if you can imagine even more nasally. And it is now, and even more kind of like whatever I have, this like hoarse, kind of high, nasally voice.
It's amazing. It's what makes, yeah. I mean, it's like, it's the thing.
It's now I get it. It's funny that like that was my job, like being a DJ, you're just your voice. So it was kind of a great like, fuck you guys to everyone who had ever teased me growing up.
Yeah.
But I was so nervous when I first started out, but I think the feeling that I'm connecting with people and that after the show, I feel really good about myself. Like it feels esteeming just to have done it. It's like, it isn't even so much like I need the applause or any of that. It was almost like, I don't even care if there are people there. It's just the fact that I did it and it was hard. And it's just like, I did, you know, kind of like clapping your hands together. Like I nailed it. I mean, I didn't even have to nail it. I took the leap and I didn't die.
Right. Yeah. And I also love that you said like your first story was about the roof caving in or something kind of, it didn't seem like something like this deep, like you were heartbroken and you had to write this. Maybe you wrote songs about heartbreak early on too, but I think there is this sort of like good natured thing to a lot of your songs still that I love. It's very sort of, I mean, there's also very like deep aspects to it, but it's like very appealing and draws you in this way.
I try to keep something relatable in there and kind of mundane. And I like the mix of deep and also very light. I think that's why I'm so drawn to comedy and comedians, because you guys are so dark and so intense. Like, I didn't realize that until I got to know comedians. And I was like, oh, most of them aren't actually super fun.
No, very boring. I mean, I think I'm really boring. I take pride in just how boring I am.
No. No, you're not boring. It's that you're not, like, my realization was like, you're not having a great time in life. I thought you guys were always just like, ha, 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 laughing at everything. It's like, no, you guys are struggling through life. Like, you know, you talk to a comic and they'll sit down and just be like, oh, this day. It's just, and like you feel things so deeply, and so do I think musicians. I can't speak for all of them, but I feel things so deeply too. And I think that's what drew me, was like, you guys are talking about really deep shit. You're talking about, I mean, very often heartbreak, a divorce, you know, abuse. Like, comedians talk about childhood abuse, like, la, 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 like, no big deal. You know, it's like, ah, I was raped as a child. But like, you make it so relatable and you give us permission to laugh. So I loved that. And I kind of wanted my songs, I mean, I didn't think about it too much. It's just my songs came out that way where, you know, I tend to express myself more in like a serious way, or what feels like, I'm not trying to get a punchline across, but I want the song to have a lightness to it too. The other day, someone asked me if I wanted to record a comedy album of music, like funny songs. And I was just like, no. And he goes, what do you mean? Why? And I'm like, well, the song has to be, there has to be a joke every second line if you write a funny song.
Right. It's too, it's again, it's like putting you in a box, kind of. Someone who's like, oh, well, you have a lot of humor in your songs, but that doesn't mean you want to just be a guitar comedian.
Right. Like, I remember Amy Schumer, before she was big, she told me this, that she used to walk on and off stage to my song Sociopath, which is on my first album. And that song is just me going, I took a bath with a sociopath. I took a bath with a sociopath, and I'll be sorry, but for now I laugh about it all night long. So it's not a funny song, but it's a funny line. Like, I took a bath with a sociopath, but it's not a like a setup and a joke. It's just a funny rhyme. But so that's like my, if I had to pick which songs of mine are funny, I might pick that. Like, well, this one's sort of humorous, but it's not a joke. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's not like I'm Garfunkel and Oates.
Was me, or I don't know. Yeah. Like,
there you go. See, now you and I should write this comedy album, because you would know how to find the punchlines.
We're going to do a musical. It'll be good.
I'm not writing it off. See, you got me thinking now. That's good. I shouldn't say no to things.
Yeah, actually, well, I'm trying to say no to more. Lately, I put on my phone, say no, because I feel like, but this is something I would say yes to. Anyway, I digress. But so when you're coming up with a song, you probably get this question in some form, and it's probably annoying, but I'm just curious anyway, like, is it usually the lyrics that come, or like an idea, or is it the music first for you, or does it vary?
For me, it's always the music, almost always the music. I kind of wish it were different, but I just come up with a lot of melodies a lot. Like, I have 7 songs right now that are just like me humming. I know all the melodies and where it will go, but I just don't know what it's about. And I'll get a word here and there, you know, like Saturday, you know, whatever. Mm. And then I kind of have to decode it. Like, okay, Saturday, what am I writing about a Saturday? You know, like,
I like the idea of like words actually not meaning what the word is even, but like just the sound of the word, like the musicality of Saturday blending into your musical idea.
Right, like scrambled eggs, Paul McCartney's scrambled eggs for yesterday or whatever song he was writing. And scrambled eggs was the stand-in for yesterday. Scrambled eggs. Oh, yeah. Da-da-da-da-da-da, scrambled eggs. Da-da-da-da-da-da, scrambled eggs. Like he said that the whole song was that, and then he figured out the words. So that's usually how mine come. I have a bunch of voice memos in my phone, and sometimes I'll come up with a melody on a walk, again same as when I was a little girl, something about the rhythm, and then I immediately think, this is plagiarized, which song is this, which song am I ripping off? And then often I'll just go, I don't know, so just write it, you know.
I have the same thing with any good idea that comes to me for a joke. I'm like, this must be a joke already. I think that just means it's like a good idea, because it's. I always feel like creativity in its best feels more like discovery. You're like, oh, this has already always existed, and I just found it somehow.
Yeah, it's like picking up a penny on the street. Like maybe it's your penny, or maybe it was someone else's, but now it's yours. Or you're gonna just leave it there. So you better, might as well just pick it up and go with it. That's funny that you do that too. That makes me feel better.
I think that's. I also think it makes sense that you would come up with music before lyrics a lot, because, I mean, some people are different. I don't really listen to lyrics in songs that much. It's really music based for me. Probably also because I'm a classical musician and that's where my ear goes. But I know when I listen to your songs, you have a very captivating voice, so I actually do get the lyrics a little more than I might normally. When I've heard your music.
Oh, cool.
But I think, I don't know, I think that makes sense to me that the music would come first.
Yeah, I mean, I'll write down lyrical ideas. And oftentimes I have like files of what my friends say that's funny, because I'll be like, that's a great lyric, you know. I wish that I did write more. I think if I read more poetry, I might get in that mindset more. I remember reading a Joan Didion book, her saddest book. What is it? Blue, something with blue. But I remember reading her book, and all of a sudden I was like writing in a way that I had never, I'm like, this is the best writing I've ever done. And I'm 90% sure I'm just stealing Joan Didion's tone. But it really did that. It was like, it just put me in that headspace. Like all of a sudden I could write like Joan Didion. Of course it faded and I was copying her, but I could do that. I think if I start reading, I'm looking at this Sylvia Plath book of poems that I love that I've had since college, Ariel.
Oh.
And if I crack this, I'll get more into lyric writing. I don't think it's too tough to switch your brain's track, you know? Like maybe I could start writing lyrics first and putting them to music.
Oh, yeah. And I think that makes sense that if you read poetry, then you get into that mindset. And like, I'll do that across mediums. Like if I'm writing like a script, I'll listen to music to be like, oh, this could be like the soundtrack to whatever I'm writing. And that kind of informs it a little more, or gets me like more inspired. It kind of wakes different parts of your brain up.
How do you write a joke? Is it that you think of something and you're like, that is ridiculous? And how does it happen? Do they just come
usually,
to you?
Yeah, sometimes they come to me, or it's like something that we take for granted that I've always thought was a little weird, like we shouldn't take for granted or something. And then I go from there, like, okay, well, why is that weird? Okay, that's the reason why. Is there like a funny analogy that's like? And it kind of pieces together from there. And then listening back to my sets is usually how I get like the best additions to it, because I'll just like hear, again, it's like discovery. Like I hear the next line, like, oh, that's what I would say next. That's a funny connection.
How often do you listen back to your sets? That's such a good thing to do.
I record every set and I try to listen back to everyone. I don't, obviously, like I'll listen back to like five in a row because I'm like behind on listening back, but ideally all of them, because it's like it's never what I thought it was. It's like the best thing in terms of improving just my performance and also the writing process for me. It's all like listening. But
that's so good. Oh my God. I've started doing radio again. It's been 10 years since I've done like a music radio show. I've done like Nikki's radio show on Sirius, which was so fun. Mm-hmm. And then I've done podcasts and stuff, but it was weird to be asked back to do a music focused show. So now I'm doing that every Monday with this place called Amazing Radio. And it's so fun, but I've been listening back to my shows and I'm like, wow, this is so hard to listen objectively. Like I sound so slow to myself. And in my head, I'm like, hi, I'm doing a radio voice. And I'm,
oh my God.
But then I'll listen back and it's like, hey, I'm stoned. And
isn't that crazy? Like, I'll think I took such a big pause between something. And then it's like, not even a pause, just nothing. Like what is happening in our heads that, you know, and it's, but is it like embarrassing for you to listen back? Do you get critical?
I get very critical, but I just say, you know, I'll just make notes. Like next time I always write more amped, more amped, more amped. Like I just need to sound, same thing with acting. I've seen myself now. It's funny when I quit acting, I started getting roles. Like I was in LA, like dedicating myself to being an actress. And then I was like, fuck this. I quit. And I went back and finished, my degree. And then I got handed a role in this little film. And then I've done little roles here and there. And whenever I watch myself back, I'm like, you look so stoned. I don't even smoke pot, but I always look just like, huh? Like, so I think I have to overact in my mind, like be really big in order to just look normal to myself. But I liked myself in my web series. You know, I'll watch the web series back and I'm like, you were good in that. And I think it was just because I got to be myself. And I don't know. That one I'm not so critical of. But yeah, with radio stuff, I have to try harder to be more amped.
Well, I mean, but also maybe you don't. Maybe it's just you and everyone loves that version of you. And it's like we're so, you know, self-loathing by nature, especially for artists, you know? So it's like, oh, no, I hate it because it's me. But like people love it because it's you.
Maybe I'll just be slower now. I'll just be like, hey.
But I loved your web series. I think I watched all of it or at least most of it.
Oh, wow, thanks.
And it's funny because, you know, it almost is like you started as an actor, right? And then becoming this singer-songwriter, then you were also already that character, and then you could play that character.
Right.
And it's almost like you got to get back to acting through going through this detour of being a musician, which I think I always love that kind of thing.
Me too. It makes me think about the fact that probably everything happens for a reason. Like when you're in the thick of attempting some career and it's not going well, I wish I could tell that version of myself, just hang tight. It'll make sense in like a decade. Like, you know, when I was trying so hard to be an actor and it just wasn't, I couldn't get a single audition. And probably I just needed to do the thing I did, which was finish school, become a musician, get into radio, gain a bunch of confidence doing radio, and then ultimately music, to then when an acting role did come to me, I so didn't care. You know what I mean? I was so like, sure, like, whatever. I'm confident now doing this other stuff that I think I was good in the performance because I wasn't so attached to it. It's like our pal Joe List talks about Buddhism a lot. And it's like that detachment idea of just like, or not like, or maybe I don't need this to be my identity or to feel good about myself. Like I can take it or leave it. That I wish I could always have that philosophy operating.
It's so elusive. It's also funny you bring up Joe List because he came up like four times in the previous episode of this. So I feel like this is becoming like a Joe List reference.
It's our ad. It's our sponsor, Joe List.
Joe List.
Every time we say his name, we get $20.
I know. I got to tell him. He's come up in my podcast like seven times now. He owes me. But no, it is that Buddhism idea. And, you know, things come when you don't care about them and don't want them. And it's so hard because then you're like, okay, well then let me not care about this thing so that I can get the thing.
Yeah.
But that's obviously still caring about it. So
yeah,
it's like,
cheating.
What do you, it's so hard to get there. And that's why I think you have to go through so many different avenues to really like distance yourself and gain kind of like your soul in other ways.
Wow. That was deep shit right there. You're right. You got to find your soul, gain your soul in an honest way. That's true.
Yeah. I mean, because I don't know if I'll ever go back to just being like an orchestral violist, probably not at this point. But I think now that I've gone through like comedy and like bombing and all these really tough performance situations, like the idea of going and taking an orchestra audition would be like much less daunting than it used to be before I did any of that. And it's like I had to sort of just try other things and expand myself in order
what
to...
What feels like the best, I don't know, gig for you? Like, what do you enjoy the most?
With viola?
No, with anything. Like, is it being on stage doing stand-up? Like, what is the dream? Yeah.
It's just being on stage doing stand-up at this point. And I have to just kind of like accept that. There's like this painful kind of letting, I mean, maybe you felt this with acting, like letting go of this sort of what you thought was your dream and embracing this thing that you're actually like really good at and gifted at. And it's like, okay, fine, I'll do that.
All right. But that's so interesting because you're very gifted at viola too.
Sorry, I feel like we're talking about me now. We're going to get back.
My fault, but I'm interested.
I mean, I have a pure ability on the viola, but the actual playing viola in certain situations, I'm really not suited for. I'm not good at being calm and accurate in the way that I would need to be to just play like concertos or be in an orchestra. And that I have so much anxiety, and maybe I could confront the anxiety, and I take beta blockers sometimes, but it's just a whole thing that I don't even feel motivated right. to deal with. And comedy, I can be this anxious ball on stage and just do it, and it feels more just easy in that sense. Not like it takes just as much work, but I feel like I reap more benefits from the work.
Yeah, I like the ease aspect of it. Like I feel the same way about, you know, playing. Like when I think about like what do I love the most? I mean, I was tortured too when you said there's a little bit of heartbreak in facing the fact of, you know, you like one thing over the other. Mm-hmm. I had that when I had this full-time job in radio. I had been at this one radio station for 6 years. I had a great gig. Like I worked 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. every day. I was the midday girl. I had a 401k. I had benefits. Like I was set. I probably would have had that job for another 10 years, you know. It would have been great. And it was fun. Like we got to play great alternative rock music, like the Pixies or, you know, Jane's Addiction or whoever would pop in, you know, and get interviewed or do shows with us. It was fun. We were always at Coachella. Like it was a great gig, but I just was obsessed with going on the road and being a musician and, you know, basically starting from scratch. And I remember quitting my job. And because I had finally gotten a record deal. So I got signed. I waited till the 11th hour to quit. I'm like, I'm not quitting this job unless I have something else. You know, I'm not just going to start from nothing. And so I got a record deal and then I quit. And my boss said, you know, if you don't take this opportunity, you will always regret it. You'll always regret, you know, not going on the road. So you can always come back here and be a DJ if you want, but I give you my blessing. And I remember sobbing and just thinking like, am I crazy? But it felt so right. And it was so nice to get that blessing from him. And it is the most fun. The most fun I've ever had is being on stage, playing music and telling stories in between songs.
Yeah. Just that immediate connection. I mean, I think I think songwriting is very similar to stand up in the sense that you can kind of like, you're in your own world, you create something and then you just go on. It's very pure. It's like create, do it. There's no like getting a camera crew together and all these other moving parts. It's just so simple.
Right. It's beautiful. And
streamlined from you to the audience. But I know you also, you sometimes, you know, you obviously write just your own music, but you also are asked to write songs for specific purposes for TV. And you do like, I love your cover of The Man by Taylor.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
And I wanted to know when you're doing that, when you're writing music for a more specific external purpose, is that easier or harder, or is it like more or less enjoyable?
It's harder for sure. I haven't done it a lot. Most of the time that my music has ended up in TV or film, I already wrote it and recorded it for myself. And then it just so happened to have worked. I just wrote a podcast theme from my friend, Nikki Glazer. But that was an idea that I had for a while. And then when she asked me to write a podcast theme, I was like, oh, I think this could work really well. It's like got the energy that a podcast theme would need. And then I just like threw in the Nikki Glaser podcast as the lyric, and it worked. So I got
lucky. Was there another lyric in the place of Nikki Glaser podcast when you first came up with it? Like,
yes, it was. It's too embarrassing to mention, but yeah,
okay, there was. We can all come up with it in our head. Something that rhymes with Nikki Glaser podcast.
It's not that embarrassing. It was sorry, not sorry. Yeah, that's what the lyric was. Sorry, not sorry. But I had written it initially for like a Disney teen, like a let's say there was like a new Miley Cyrus, but like 12. So I was writing a song for someone like that. And it was always on the shelf, just waiting. And I was like, oh, that's too bad. That song never got used by anybody. And we sort of pitched it, but it never worked out. And I would always go back and listen to it, just going, this is the most ridiculous song. It was just like, sorry, not sorry. And I even played it for my boyfriend recently, and he just looked at me like with horror, like, ooh, that you don't want to ever put. And I'm like, it's a great song. I'm never going to put it out as myself. But then all of a sudden, Nikki Glaser podcast put in there was like, oh yeah, this makes perfect sense. And we tailored it specifically to her, and it had different versions where her mom and was doing a voiceover, and then her dog was barking, and then her co-host was in there too. It was really funny, but we went with the more simple version of just Nikki Glaser podcast, but it worked out. See, it's another one of those instances of you just have to be patient, and then it'll make sense over time. My dog is trying to get in this room, but
keep
talking. I'll open the door.
It was funny. You said her dog was barking right when your dog started barking, so it was very fitting. Oh my God, what a cute dog!
She's so cute. Her name's Willa.
Hi, Willa.
Hey, Willa.
She's
a little brat. She's the upside of moving upstate. You know, you can't have a dog in a New York apartment, can you? I guess you can, but it's a pain in the ass.
Like a little one, a purse dog, you know? But that's like a... Who wants that? Yeah, I was thinking of getting like a little teacup something, but then I'm like, I don't know. I should just get like a hamster.
Yeah. There you go. Take your hamster on a plane.
Yeah, it's my therapy hamster. But that's interesting because, you know, I whenever I see covers, it's like I think of classical music as kind of like we're like glorified cover musicians, sort of. But right. I mean, we're trying to like accurately recreate to the T like some composer's manuscript. So it's a little different than, you know, taking a song and making it your own, which I think is sort of this really more like nuanced creativity within these parameters. But I would wonder, because I always like limitations when I'm creating. Like it's easier for me to like write roast jokes, for instance, because I'm like, okay, it's like about this person. There's not that many things I can say. Boom, boom, boom.
Right.
And I wonder when you're writing a cover or creating a cover, is it fun in that way that you have so many limitations, but then you could be like, well, but what can I do? What could I change?
And yes, I liked the fact that, you know, Cat Power, when she covered Satisfaction by the Stones, she never put in, I can't get no satisfaction. She sang everything but that. So when I was covering Swift's The Man, I was like, this is such a great song, but I'm not, personally, I don't feel connected to the bridge at all. It totally makes sense in her song. But to me, the lyrics were so well written and fashioned to talk about gender unfairness, basically, and like mm-hmm. the total hypocrisies of expecting women to be X, Y, or Z and not expecting that from men and vice versa. She did such a great job, I thought, of writing that in such a succinct way. And then the bridge is sort of more silly. I can't remember exactly the lines, but it's like, you're a bitch or whatever. And I was like, I don't want to put that in there. I just want to keep it kind of more serious and sad, or bring out the sadness of these lyrics. So I had fun with that. And it was nice to give myself permission to not put the bridge in. And then with T.I., you know, he drops the N-word 1,000 times in that song. So I'm like, I'm not going to be doing that. I remember my label at the time was like, you should sing the N-word. I was like, are you insane?
This is my God.
20. Also, what year was this? 2010 or something. I'm like, is that, we've changed a lot in 12 years. Thank God. I was like, I do not think that's a good idea.
yeah, good for you for having the wherewithal, like even without the cultural pressure behind it. Because I think, yeah, back then there was less like, no, we can't do that. It would have been like, well, it's in the song, so I'm going to say it, you know?
Yeah. Didn't even notice you were white until we have white privilege. I mean, now even singing that song is iffy, you know, it depends on the city I'm in when I'm doing it. Some cities, you know, it's like they demand that I play it. And then in others, I've been, you know, in Brooklyn, I won't do it in Brooklyn. Because they're like, maybe not.
Yeah. It's also, when you said that, you know, you wanted to bring out the more sad side of that Taylor Swift song. Again, that's like, you know, because when she sings it, there is like a humor to it. You know, obviously I feel seriously what she's saying, but there's like a peppy humor to it, a little like snarky.
Yeah, like, a bratty thing.
And then when you sing it, it's just like, oh no, it's just this really dark, like, yeah, it's, and it reminds me of just how like comedians can take, you know, dark things and make them, and you're kind of like doing the reverse there and making it, emphasizing this sadder thing. And I love that. And I'm like, I'm all into sad. All the music
me
I listen
too.
To is sad. Or someone told me the term the other day, sad bastard music, which is like all I listen to now. What sad music do you listen to?
Oh God, I love, what am I listening to now? I mean, weirdly now I love Frank Ocean a lot. So I'll listen to Frank a lot. I listen to like one artist on repeat until I get totally sick of it, or one song on repeat. Even though I don't like her, I think her lyrics are kind of, I don't know. There's a lot about the Ariana Grande record that I'm just like blown away by. And then I'll listen to, like, I'll try to share it with someone I respect. And they're like, are you crazy? Why are you sending me this song?
Like, Ariana Grande is a national treasure.
And she is. And also sometimes when you listen to her songs, I'm like, is all she's saying like, I like to have sex. It's fun. I like to have sex. It's fun. I'm cute. I like to have sex.
Right.
Sometimes her songs, I'm just like, this is so ridiculous. But like she, I love the strings in Shut Up, her song Shut Up. The strings are so fucking gorgeous. I've listened to it a million times and I'm just like, I'll play it for my friend, like my musician friends. And I'm like, can you even handle? I mean, have you heard
well,
arrangement?
No, but I love strings and stuff, obviously. So I will listen to Shut Up and I hopefully will appreciate what you're talking about, because I'm a sucker for any good string arrangement in any context. Like, I think strings, I mean, I love strings, obviously. I just think they bring the magic to like anything. Like,
it's so
any
good.
Song.
It reminds me of like the Alice in Wonderland soundtrack too, or like a Disney. That's what I love about what she does. And, you know, so that's not really sad bastard music, but Elliot Smith always, Fiona Apple always. Mm-hmm. God. But yeah, I just keep coming back to Frank Ocean. I think the Blonde record is so beautiful and sad. And then he has a couple singles that I love. Biking Solo is great, but has a sadness to it. I don't know. I'll have to think some more.
Well, I did the thing to you that I hate people do to me. I did 3 podcasts recently where people asked me like what music I listen to. And I was like, God, I hate this question. But then I wanted to know about Sad Bass. It was a more specific, anyway.
Vivaldi right Four now. Seasons. Vivaldi Four Seasons. I think it's Autumn. Whichever one is it, where it's like, dun, 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 dun. Never mind. I can't sing
it. I think it's, Autumn or Winter is like the.
Yeah, that's the best piece of music ever to me. And I should know which section it is, but. My
I don't
favorite.
Even know which section it is.
It's I've cried at that like hundreds of times in my life.
Yeah, I just love it. I don't know. And it's not because I want to, for me, it's like a release. It's not because I'm like, I'm sad. I want to listen to sad music. It just like feels like good to listen to sad music for me. I don't know if that's how you.
Yeah, what are you listening to now?
Well, I listen to a ton of Max Richter. I feel weird because I play with him, but I was a fan of his before. So it's not just like, oh, because I play with him, I listen to him.
Right.
But he has that one track that you've probably heard in a million movies, On the Nature of Daylight, which is just like the most tragic, beautiful piece ever.
I'm writing it down.
Oh, yeah. Max Richter, this guy Olafur Arnolds. It's like all instrumental for me. I'm like really not into, usually don't seek out music with lyrics as much, but... for whatever reason. But I wanted to ask you, I know you love being on stage and, you know, we've talked about like this connection, but have you in the past or do you still deal with any performance anxiety? And if so, do you have any like horror stories? Or
you know what? I don't deal with performance anxiety, thank God, but I do deal with this really annoying thing of pre-performance anxiety. So like, I will not practice, or this has been my pattern. I won't practice leading up to a show. And then I'm so filled with anxiety. I'm kind of doing it now because I have a show on Saturday night. I should have practiced by now. I should like be well into knowing what my set list is. I have no idea what my set is. I haven't practiced any of the songs. So this is what I do. And it's really fucked up and I have to stop doing it. Usually what I'll do is I'll work with an action partner. Like I'll just text somebody like I would text you. Hey, Isabel, I'm going to practice for 10 minutes right now. And then I'll say, I did it. You know, just little bits like that, that will help me. Because usually I will practice actually for like 30 minutes or I'll go over the 10, but I'll just set short goals. So I'll just tell you right now that today I'm going to practice for 10 minutes. There, now I'm accountable to someone.
I'm going to check in with you later.
Okay, good. Thank you. Sure. That's the annoying thing that I do and I hate it. But I actually don't get too nervous before I go on stage. I'm kind of like excited, like get me out there, especially if I am practiced, then I'm excited. Mm-hmm. But if I'm not, then I'm in hell.
Do you like worry that you're, is it like a superstitious thing? Sometimes I like don't want to overdo preparation for something because I feel like if I do, it's like I'm going to be too robotic or in my head or something. And
nope.
Sometimes it works and sometimes
I wish I were that. No, I'm just like, you know what it is? I think my shoulder's hurting right now. I've had this frozen shoulder thing for so long and it's going away, but I think it is. See, I'm thinking about the show, so the shoulder's acting up. It hurts lately to play, so that's one thing. Physically, it'll hurt.
Oh, yeah.
But I think, oh, shit, I forgot what I was just going to say. Oh, it's well, not the robot thing. Oh, I don't know.
Have you had injuries in the past? I'm like, I'm the repetitive stress injury queen when it comes to like viol. I've had to take, that's why I started comedy, because I had to take like two months off from playing because I hurt my wrist so bad just playing.
It could be that. I mean, I wish I could blame that I'm practicing too much, but I don't. I think it's just, I was emotionally stressed out about stuff. That's why I avoid practicing. That's what I was going to say. Because when I practice, I find that it opens up a lot of emotions and I'm like, you know, getting upset about, like I'm singing a song that's upsetting. And so I think that's part of why I avoid. But I think the bigger issue is that I am a perfectionist. So I think you have to be perfect. So don't even start practicing because you're nowhere near perfect. And then pretty soon I've sabotaged myself. And now it's the day before the show and I'm not ready. So lately what I've been doing before shows is I'll like 2 weeks ahead of time, I'll start with like, okay, every day I'm going to just do 10 minutes. And I forgot to do that this week.
But that makes sense. I've never thought of it quite in that way, connecting perfectionism to sort of like procrastination. And maybe people have written about this. But yeah, because when you start doing something, no matter what, you're not going to be perfect at it. So it's like you kind of have to accept being not perfect in order to do anything.
Yeah, I heard someone say that years ago. They said something like, perfectionism leads to procrastination, leads to paralysis. I might have gotten the order wrong, but it's sort of like the root is perfectionism. And that's why I procrastinate and procrastinate. And then I don't ever end up practicing. I'm just like paralyzed because it has to be perfect. And now, oh my God, it's already an hour before the show and I haven't even begun.
Right. But it doesn't seem like you have the same thing with songwriting because you're very prolific in that sense with, you know, just doing it and write the writing process of that.
What's helped a lot is co-writing. If I'm working with you, then we have to get this done together. So I'm starting to co-write with someone this week and she wants to, you know, set a day to work on it. And I'm like, great. If you just put it in your calendar, then something will get done. It might be like half a line, but at least something will get done, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So that's kind of nice to work with somebody. If I'm working alone, I can constantly, you know, postpone the meeting or, you know, postpone the session, the writing session. So that helps a lot. I've been co-writing for the last few years.
Oh, what, do you co-write with your boyfriend or with?
Sometimes, yeah, with Matt. And then a lot of people in Nashville I've written with. But I did write one song last year on my own, which kind of felt like a feat. But it's been a while since I've done it. I wrote a song for my friend's birthday. I was like, here we go. Let's do it. Yeah, and then I wrote one with Andrew Collin, Nikki's.
You did?
Yeah, we wrote. Well, he has a country music friend, like a big country. And so we wrote a song. He gave me idea. I don't know if we wrote a song, but he gave me some ideas for this guy. He said, like, this guy likes to do all these hobbies and this. So I threw those into the song. And I actually really like the song. I don't think it'll end up being his song, but I was like, I'll play with this. This could be fun.
What's it called?
What is that one called? Love to Hate. People just love to hate. It's all about
people. That's a country song. I love that as a country. I can like hear it.
It's a funny one. Yeah. It's just like, God, I wish I could remember. People just love to hate. I don't know. I can't remember it, but it was a jaunty. Oh. It was a jaunty little number. Yeah.
Jaunty little number. I love that.
It's from the point of view of a really self-centered guy. That's like, I don't know why people hate me. I do this asshole thing and this asshole thing. And I'm like, he's like a complete jerk, the protagonist. Mm-hmm. And then the chorus is people just love to hate. It's, I don't know. It's
they
kind
do.
Of, it's kind of fun to write a song from the point of view of someone else.
Yeah. Well, you know, if we co-write that musical, then that'll be like, you have to get that done. For
okay,
sure.
Good.
But I was talking about this on another episode as well. Like I can't, if I set goals for myself, like something will happen that's related to the goals, but it won't happen when I set it and in the way I want it. You know, like I don't really have like a routine in terms of creating. I'll just be like, okay, well, I'll make a to-do list and then I'll do like a different version of the to-do list in a way.
Yes.
Or something. So
I don't mind that so much. I'm trying lately to let myself off the hook for stuff and be like, it'd be great if I did these six things today. But then if I'm naturally drawn to do something else, I'll just do it. Like if I was supposed to, you know, do laundry and fix my printer and, you know, book this rental car. But yet I'm like staring at my guitar and thinking, I really want to practice that thing for my guitar lesson next week. I'm going to go with the intuitive feeling rather than the to-do list, because I don't know when that inspiration is going to strike again, the creative force. So right. I feel like it's good to give myself days like that when I'm not so rigid.
Yeah, it's so hard to like to be intuitive for some reason sometimes, even though it should be, I mean, it's like the easier thing in a way, it's more natural, but we don't want to listen to our intuition in so many different contexts, like with our daily pursuits and also with like our careers, like with, you know, acting versus music or viola and comedy. It's like, why are we so resistant to just these like natural, oh, duh, I should do this right now.
Yeah, this is because we have the pressures of life.
We have these. Yeah, man, life's just hard, man. Well, Anya, it's been such a pleasure having you on the podcast. This
Thank
has been
you,
so great.
Isabel. I'm so honored to have been here.
Yeah, it's just it's so nice to catch up with you, and you know, hopefully I'll see you in person at some point.
I know.
In the next
let's
whatever.
Get cracking on that musical.
Okay. I'm going to check on your 10 minutes.
Thank you. Okay, good. I promise I'll let you know when I do it.
Okay. All right. Thanks,
Thank
Anya.
You.
Talk soon.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. For more, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter, both at @IsabelHagen_, and sign up for my mailing list at IsabelHagen.com. And as always, please rate and review the podcast. Thank you so much, and take care.